The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Amplifier Advisors, LLC, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to What's Working in Washington on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Now your host, Jonathan Aberman.
Years ago, I heard a successful entrepreneur say that there were two ways to raise capital. That was the hard way and the really hard way. At the time, I thought it was a pretty funny line and laughed a little, but over the years, I've realized that was a pretty apt description. You know, I've raised money myself and I've helped others do it. Sometimes we've succeeded, but frankly, more often than that, we've failed. Raising money is tough, but it is necessary for many businesses. Well, many of our listeners are looking for guidance on the process of how to raise capital, so we brought three guests into the studio today to talk about their experiences with fundraising and how they would help entrepreneurs or advise entrepreneurs to approach it. They each have a unique perspective, which I think will help us shape a conversation that provide insights from many directions to help all of our listeners who are interested in this topic really go off and do something truly difficult, raising capital to grow their businesses. With me in the studio is Jamie Harvey, a serial entrepreneur who's raised outside capital throughout his career and has the scars to prove it. Jamie, good to see you.
I can't show them on the radio, though.
Well, we're I think somehow glad of that. John Funge is currently an investor at Data Tribe and previously was a serial entrepreneur of some success, or more than some success. He's been involved in fundraising now from both perspectives. John, great to have you.
Jonathan, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And Mark Modica, he's founder of ModScore. Mark's been part of our tech community for many years. He's helped hundreds of regional startups raise capital, and he thinks he may have found a new tool to help them find startup capital. Mark, great to see you.
Hey, great to see you too. I was originally, Jamie and I go way back. He was like one of my first clients and helping raise capital, and I've seen those scars, and they're not pretty.
True story.
He's not that pretty
you
either.
Know, but, you know. Feel like we're in that scene in Jaws, where all that's missing now is we all can roll up our arms, like, this is where NEA took a chunk out of my arm.
But we definitely need a bigger boat.
We definitely need a bigger boat to raise fundraising. So what makes fundraising such a painful process, then?
You know, it's one of the reasons I started this thing called ModScore, and I've been doing this for a long time. The thing is that makes it most painful is that most founders or entrepreneurs don't realize that they're actually in a buying-selling process. They're selling their company. They're not selling it, but you're selling something, and you have to understand your buyers. And over time, back in the day, back in the 90s when we were doing this, the buyers were looking for product, a little revenue, and some other financial metrics, and I call them financial investors. And over time, the guys in San Francisco have really kind of taken over, and they're what I call more market investors. They're looking to throw bigger money at trying to own a market, and they're not looking at sort of the same metrics that the financial investors are looking at. And so here, particularly in this area, I think a lot of people pitch their deals, and so for me, there's something that's happening. I was talking to Jamie about this, and I'll end this real quick. There's so many seed companies that are getting funded now across the nation, across the world, thousands and thousands and thousands. And then the data will show you that the number of A and B rounds, which they really need, is going down.
Yeah.
But the amount per round is going up. So you got these big funds, big capital. The partners haven't changed, so they have to deploy more capital. So what you see is this bifurcation. There's this huge hole in the market. Lots of seed, lots of later stage growth, and their middle growth is really getting harder to get.
So for you, Mark, the big pain point for an entrepreneur is understanding that fundamentally there's growing a business to satisfy customers, but having a business that's a financial asset may be two different things. Jamie, what's your experience?
I mean, I think what people don't know about raising money when they get into it is that while you're raising your money, you're actually investing your life. So like you're taking all of your time and your passion and like attention that you could be spending on your family or your well-being, and you're pouring it into going out and talking to people who don't understand what you do and having them tell you no all the time. And, so that creates a kind of stress that, that people don't understand. I was just, reminiscing with Mark about the early days of my first company, Digital Addiction. And when we got our first big break, you know, I was trying to raise $500,000 on a mill of a pre-money, and you know the deal came back at a quarter of a million at a half, which I was like, okay, let me think about that for a second. Yes, right. And you know, while we were in the process, you know, at the very end, two painful things happened. One, the guy that I worked with, who was the CFO for Mark, his virtual CFO company, got crammed down in the round. So, like, my friend essentially, like, got $30,000 taken away from him in the round, and I had to go tell him that. And, you know, the other thing was that the investor's cockatoo bit me in the middle of my presentation and took a giant chunk out of my hand, at which point they said, "You're funded. The bird loves you." And I was like,
that was Doug.
Wow. Humphrey. Yeah, it was Doug. Hey, Doug. So, you know, it's a funny thing because, like, the bird liking me had been this big part of, like, the, like, connecting with this investor, and it's bird like me, and, like, we're doing the pitch, and then the bird bit me, and I thought, oh, no, I'm screwed. The bird bit me. I said, no, the bird biting you is actually, like, great. And I thought to myself, is he afraid I'm going to sue him?
Because, right, you know, I've got a new listener contest. Every listener has had a bird bite them as part of fundraising. I'm giving $50. Now we'll go on. So for you, Jamie, it was the personal aspect, giving up your life, the sacrifices, and then dealing with frankly, eccentricity to get money from
people. Delivering bad news to people. Mm. I mean, like, when you invested in one of my companies, I had to come and tell you, hey, I'm shutting it down. I mean, like...
And I bit you.
And you, you were great. You were great. But, yeah, but not everybody is so great.
But that wasn't a
not
positive
everybody
thing.
Is so great. It's, you know, I know, all kidding aside, you know, I know founders who have killed themselves. I know founders who have ended up institutionalized. You know, it is very tough.
Well, it's tough.
It is tough.
Startups and entrepreneurship attract, it's so binary, it actually does attract people who have binary personalities.
Definitely.
I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges I had as an investor, is separating the people that were a little bit off the wall enough to want to take the challenge from people who are truly off the wall. I think a lot of the due diligence is actually to try to figure out if an entrepreneur is sane.
If you're a woman, you will probably be sexually harassed.
That's harsh.
If you're a person of color, you are going to face discrimination. And I don't mean, like, necessarily by everybody, but I would say out of, like, the 30 angel investors I dealt with in the 90s, I know two of them turned into people that mistreated people.
So what are you getting at? Is I'm going to John speak. I know he's dying.
I've got a couple of thoughts here I wanted to share.
So it's about people so far as I'm hearing, good, bad, and otherwise.
Well, on the point with the entrepreneur, it's very one of the things I think is that entrepreneurship fundamentally. I mean, there's almost like an artist. Like, there's a side to it that is actually not entirely rational. Like, if you're purely coldly rational, you probably won't be an entrepreneur. And I think most, like, really sort of inspired founders know that at some level. So from my experience, I've actually had this kind of unique opportunity to be on both sides of the table. So my own background, I'm a multi-time entrepreneur. I founded, built, and sold three companies all in the DC metro area. So I know this tech ecosystem decently well and the various people here. And then a couple of years ago, I had the opportunity. I work now at Data Tribe, and we're a venture investor startup studio and foundry, primarily focused on cybersecurity and AI-intensive companies that we invest in. And it's very interesting. I think one of the things that makes challenging for entrepreneurs is that by and large, founders are super passionate, super knowledgeable. They're deep in certain discipline, but what they're not deep in is necessarily the business of venture. And one of the things, one only needs to look at the NVCA docs, which I encourage any entrepreneur to do. I mean, if you're thinking about kind of starting, you know, kind of raising money in venture.
That's a National Venture Capital Association.
Exactly.
They publish docs on their website,
and they have,
like, what investment documents look like.
The thing of it is that there's some very clever people that work in finance, as we know. And they've been tinkering on deal structure. Like, even just in this conversation, you guys are using terminology that the average, like, kind of starter entrepreneur would have no idea, you know, cram down this and that. And the thing is, there's this massive knowledge asymmetry. And so one of the things I would encourage, like, two things that I think are really important is that the entrepreneur needs to target their investors. Like, one, you know, ounce of targeting will save you massive amounts of effort in terms of just having a mismatch and targeting with regard to their investment interest, how active they are. Do they actually have funds to deploy? Are they, are they the size that, do they write checks that are the size you need? Like, all those types of things can save you a lot of effort. But the other thing is try, and there are plenty of books and blogs and things, try to understand the business of venture. So even, I mean, I raised money like a couple times for different companies. And then in the last couple of years, I've found myself like my eyes open and learning all these things about the kind of the inside view of venture. And I think the better you can empathize mutually, but with the VC or the investor trying to do, the better you can position yourself to align with their goals, and the more success you'll have.
You know, that's just something that's said in a lot of podiums, a lot of times, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs feel like, oh God, the rich guy is telling me what to do. But at the end of the day, I can tell you, speak from my perspective, Amplifier never wrote a check larger than $500,000, and I would get emails lobbed over the transom all the time. We're raising a $10 million round. Well, good for you. I help start companies. I don't raise. I don't go do Series B, Series C.
Just not targeting.
But somebody thinks that it's worth my time to look at it, and you just get overwhelmed. Yeah. Go ahead, Mark. Well,
and so like the part of the reason I created this ModScore thing was just for that, because I get a lot of people that I spent when I was consulting and helping people raise capital, I spent 80% of my time telling them most of the stuff they were told is a myth. And that's a real problem. So remember, there's buyers and sellers. So if you're a seller, an entrepreneur, and you're going to a buyer and the buyer's telling you that you shouldn't raise more than $3 million, but there are funds that write checks for $3 million, it's a lie. It's like they don't know how much money you actually need, and you shouldn't listen to that.
They're telling you what you need based upon what they can give you.
Right. Correct. So the whole industry is pretty much a monopoly on a lot of stuff, and it's kind of changing. But the monopoly is like you have to come to me for money. I'm the only place to come. Now, people like you and now your company, you're actually part of the problem right now in a good way, is because you're creating this huge amount of really, really well-run companies. Like back in the day when they didn't know anything. Now these companies are actually pretty well run. They actually are getting capital, $500,000, $1 million, $2 million, which is creating this huge demand for this A and B round, this 5, 10, 15. And these guys aren't doing it because Barry Eggers, who was head of the NVCA, he was my guy. I ran a Silicon Valley company. And I went to him 2 years ago and he said, Mark, we're not doing the 8 million like we used to do. We're doing 25 or 2.
What's really interesting, and this is a national phenomenon we talked about in other shows, is that the venture capital industry has bifurcated in a significant way, and that there are people that are really still interested in garage inventors and creating things like a data tribe or a seed fund like Amplifier and Operated. But we've never had more venture capital money going into the asset class, but it's going into larger and larger and larger funds that need to invest in WeWorks, $50, $100 million a time. And I think it's a real big innovation challenge, and it's something that thematically is a big challenge here in D.C. I want to continue this conversation when we come back afterwards. Let's talk about, now that we've talked about it's personal, you can't take it personal maybe, the investor is your customer, there's this mismatch going on. Let's start to give folks a sense of the kind of things that they need to do well in order to raise capital and some mistakes to avoid. So here, What's Working in Washington with Jamie Harvey, John Funge, and Mark Mudica. We'll be right back. Thanks to Acuity. Acuity is a leading technology innovator solving big data analytics problems. Check them out today and discover the power of Acuity. And we're here at What's Working in Washington Extra, talking about how to raise capital for a startup emerging venture. I'm here with Jamie Harvey, serial entrepreneur, John Funge, an investor at Data Tribe, and Mark Mudica, founder of ModScore. Well, guys, we set the table well. Let's start with, let's have a conversation. If you're an entrepreneur, if you're a founder, what do you really have to do well in order to raise capital?
One thing that I found was you got to get out there and have a lot of conversations. I mean, and there's a bit of a random walk kind of element to it. I see a lot of entrepreneurs being coached not to talk to this kind of person and not to talk to that kind of person and don't waste your time. You do have to be careful with your time. But, sometimes I would get invited to go talk to an investment bank and, they clearly weren't in our asset class. I didn't know why they wanted to talk to us. Actually, they wanted to get educated by me about virtual objects, which have turned into a $1 billion industry, which we invented. So,
not that you're bitter or anything.
Not bitter.
But there's a lesson in there, which is that often an entrepreneur can have the great idea but at the wrong moment.
Oh, we were always too early. Like they're going to write that on my gravestone, right?
And me too.
those investment bankers tended to make introductions. They introduced us to other people. Like there were a lot of random connections that got made that actually eventually led to raising money.
So your view is to take a lot of meetings.
I later tried not doing that. Like when I did Sponto with you, I was actually working a full-time thing and doing it on the side, and I didn't have time to go take all those meetings. I didn't get the kind of fulsome, exponential benefit of all the relationships that I was making through the networking that I had earlier in my career, and it became a problem later.
But that may run counter to, I suspect, what Mark's going to get at, which is you want to be tactical, right? I mean, you can't just spray it everywhere. You've got to be tactical.
Yeah, so what we're doing is – so I see there's three problems that I've digitized. One is creating data. I think there's a lot of bad data. Decks are bad. Financial models are bad. Those are all for the financial advisors. We're doing something different. We're creating new data, actually, where there is no data. because that's what I saw in Silicon Valley was what they were buying. They were buying vision and the ability to go really big and then actually go really small really quickly with simple data and extrapolate that. So we're building a system around being able to create data that someone will want to see. So one is data, and I focus a lot on that. Two is speed. You got to get there fast. So what this random walk is like, he did a fast random walk, and it's getting harder and harder to do that, right? Especially because the bigger money is in one place. And again, we're trying to track that and create a market for that where it's not. And then three is connectivity. This is almost sound like an internet company, right? Data, speed, and connectivity. Are you connected? Are you targeting the right stuff? Well, there are funds in Silicon Valley that you've never heard of that would be all of the capital in DC. So there's this weird sort of, again, bifurcation. There's these super giant rounds. You know, how do you get to that if you have this big idea? Because everyone you invested in and all the things you're invested in, not one of them is going to say, I don't have a big idea. This isn't a $1 billion idea, or right, $500 million or 250. And you attract that. So for us, the real important thing is, A, your decks suck. No one's funding a deck. Your financial model's outdated. No one's funding that anymore. Use of proceeds made up. Not funding that anymore unless you have over 5 million in revenue, unless you're doing things that guys around here like Sands Capital and other people are doing.
So your view is that, yes, you go broad, but you have to go broad. You have to have some tactical view. And that's,
yes.
But I want to bring John and Jamie before we get your insight there, because, John, my experience as an investor is I always wanted people showing up at my door early in the process and wanting to take money from me.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I think is important to keep in mind is – that when you are entering into this relationship, it is, and a lot of people sometimes make the analogy to dating or mm-hmm. marriage or something like that. And in some ways, you're going to put in place probably 200 pages of legal documents that bind you together in until like the company exits or, you know, and so
forever, basically.
Exactly.
Until the company exits.
So there really
bankrupt.
Is a kind of courtship that's happening. And it's really important that the chemistry works and that mutually you guys can work together well. I mean, I think there's this whole mutual evaluation of like how well do we kind of, you know, vibe and work together. I'm a huge fan. I mean, kind of like what James is saying, like you got to go hard at it. But I would add one thing to it personally. I think you want to have a lot of quality meetings that are targeted. So, and what I mean by that is if it's possible, you want to talk to people that in the firm have the authority to make a decision. Like there's a lot of people out there that are relatively junior that don't have much authority to actually make decisions, and they can waste a lot of an entrepreneur's time. As an example, I think you need to be like, as an entrepreneur, you are, it's important. It's a little bit of theater. I mean, in kind of preparing for this today, I was thinking a little bit like, well, of the, you know, myriad entrepreneurs we've met in the last couple of years, Data Tribe, like who are the ones that really kind of sort of stuck out at me? And, you know, there's a little bit of theater, like you're kind of, you know, there's a little bit of a show and the VCs are looking at this saying, okay, how is this person able to compel me and therefore compel a market or compel customers? And so there's a little bit of a sort of showmanship. And part of that is being really prepared. Like you have to make sure you understand who you're talking to. You have to make sure you understand your market, your competition. Like it is really not good if you're in a meeting and somebody who has like a light to medium understanding of what you're doing, like an investor you're presenting to, can like just out of the air pull up a competitor that you've never heard of. Like that is basic homework that you have to do before you enter the process. Now, keeping in mind, realistically, it's very dynamic and there's lots of competitors that always can come up and it is easy to play stump the chump, you know what I mean? And so you want to stay away from that, like, but as, you know, as an investor, but it's just you want to be very targeted and you want to be very prepared and you want to have a little bit of showmanship in the way you do it.
Can I grab this?
Sure. Go ahead.
I want to clarify. So when I talk about the random walk and getting out there, like at the end of the day, you're doing that so you can find the right person. And so I found the wrong people before. Like, so Doug was the right person. He was absolutely – and when I met you, I had targeted you. Like, I knew you were the person I wanted to talk to.
Yeah, you were kind of stalking me.
Oh, I was totally stalking you because you were, like, the only investor in the area that made the kind of investments that I needed to do to my company, really. Mm. But I knew that because I talked to 30 other people, and they all told me the same thing. But at the end of the day, you're trying to get to that right relationship, because when you get to those wrong relationships, I mentioned the 30 people, and two of them are, like, known harassers, right? Like, how did I end up with them, right? I went to a investor group. I went to one of these breakfasts. My deck broke down. They couldn't give me my deck. And I said, I'm just going to do the pitch off the top of my head. I gave the pitch of my life. Best pitch I ever gave. no deck. Yeah. Everybody ran to invest. Ended up with 30 guys.
So oftentimes, just
a piece.
Just a conversation. You know, literally no presentation. You just have a kind of chat about what you're doing is oftentimes the most effective I've found.
So I'm trying to fix this because this is not the way to do it.
100%. Wow, Mark. Okay.
So like this is completely wrong. So like you have thousands of companies out there, and I created the Capital Call with Carl Grant. Mm-hmm. I've been doing pitch competitions for 25 years. Mm-hmm. The thing about it is I can't take somebody and teach them how good Jamie is and do theater. And it shouldn't be about theater. It's important, but it shouldn't be about that. Because wait a second. So I've had people get $25 million funding because my CEO and the investor, his father and the other guy had been in Vietnam. And that was interesting, right? So Mod School, what we're doing is we're doing a video pitch. So I'm scripting you out. So there's no random chance that you're going to have a bad pitch. So and by doing that and showing these people like they do in Hollywood, I have 7 questions, simple. I go through that, they video it, I write a storyboard. Even when they go off and do these pitches, now they're prepared, now they understand. And but the second thing to what you were saying before is, what you're both saying is before is, 100% people don't understand, entrepreneurs don't understand, you're selling your company. So there's a provision in that you don't need to know anything about the docs. I'm sorry. You only need to know one thing. It doesn't matter how much of the company they're buying. There's this thing called a protective provisions. A VC, you cannot raise capital, sell the company, or do anything without their permission. So whether they own 10%, 20%, 40%, you are married to them. And if you get the wrong guy who has the wrong fund and the wrong amount of money and puts you on the wrong trajectory, you're dead.
And even if you're doing angel funds and it's a smaller person, they don't have those protective provisions. If the person calls you every day and rides you about like, hey, did you put that ad in this magazine and blah, blah, blah. And the truth of the matter is they've never done anything on the internet before and they've only run a factory. They're going to actually pull you down. And if you end up with 6 of those guys, mm-hmm. you're dead.
Everything that you've described comes back to my mind to the analogy John raised earlier about dating. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing as bad as being half drunk at 2 a.m. in a bar. We do really bad.
And so good.
We've never done that.
But my point is that
I don't drink.
An entrepreneur who's not thoughtful, an entrepreneur who's not tactical, an entrepreneur who's sloppy and goes about things in a half a manner is not likely to raise capital. John, what do you think?
No, I think it's right. I mean, you see lots of these, right? And you can really tell the difference. See, fundamentally, like a great founder is somebody, and this is really hard to do. Okay. And when I say theater, I don't mean like, you know, gimmicks.
It's not a lot.
I mean, sort of just presentation.
Yeah. I think you're right because that's why I'm trying to do it in a right way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly.
Actually, you're doing more theater, Mark.
Yeah.
You're actually like scripting it. You're doing video. Like it's actually like produced. It's Hollywood theater.
Well, no, it's their iPhone, but I just script it. there's nothing like this TOP thing.
But the thing is, being a founder is really hard. All right. It's really hard. And again, I feel very fortunate because a lot of times if I put on my entrepreneur hat, I mean, there's so many D-baggy investors that have never been in your shoes. And it's so frustrating to have to like, present or work, you know, like it's very, very frustrating as a founder. The thing is, though, one of the very, very basic tests is, can you more or less do what you're going to say you're going to do at a high quality level? And so that's one of the things that, I think comes across in small, subtle ways. The details matter. Like you just have to pay attention to the details it's not that everything has to be super like fancy or polished, but you have to just be attentive to the details. And I do think it's this Goldilocks thing because nobody like it's super easy to say, just go out and like raise money when you're ready. Well, that's easy to say. How do you exactly know when you're ready? And so there's this delicate process of maybe bulletproofing yourself with some trusted either investors or other entrepreneurs to kind of really harden yourself so you know, no, I'm not ready. There's this weakness over here or, you know, things like that.
I'm a contrarian. People around here, particularly in DC and East Coast, it's all about revenue. You don't have enough revenue, you know, this revenue, that revenue. And they say you can't raise money if you don't have revenue. You can't raise a lot of money. You have to do it incrementally, which I've broken several times. And I've seen VCs do that. I went to Silicon Valley Fund, and they were spending $1 million a month when around here we could barely raise $2 million for anybody. So there's people out there who are winning, and the winning guys who are winning are going big and doing things based upon a future vision.
Well, gentlemen, this was great. Jamie Harvey, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Mark Modica, good luck with ModScore.
Thank you.
And John Funge, I'm looking forward to great things from DataTribe.
Pleasure to be here, John.
And now, non-billable consult with legal expert Andrew Sherman.
Normally, you would think that every employment relationship has a single employer for each of its employees. But over the years, who is an employee and who is an independent contractor and who is the employer has become a bit of a gray area. Can an employee really have more than one employer? Or can a party inadvertently be classified as what's called a joint or co-employer just because they're a franchisor or private equity fund investor in an enterprise? And if yes, can this other employer be held accountable and responsible for labor and employment law violations if the primary employer breaks or allegedly breaks the law? Well, under the Obama administration, the definition of who could be deemed a joint employer expanded greatly, creating fear and resentment in the franchising, construction, private equity, and even healthcare communities. Since then, the Trump administration, there has been attempts to narrow and clarify the definition. The Department of Labor finally came out with some clarity and safe harbor. Under these new rules, which go into effect March 16th of 2020, the Department of Labor established a four-factor test to determine whether or not you might have joint employment liability. The new test is based on these factors, asking the second entity, has the power to hire or fire the employee? Do you supervise or control the employee's work schedule or conditions? Do you determine the employee's pay rate or method of payment? And do you maintain the worker's employment records? So while this practice appears to be well within the new safe harbor rules, be on the lookout for courts and other state and local regulations that may seek to define this definition. This issue continues to evolve, and while employers have gotten some relief under the new Department of Labor standards, this fight is far from over.
That was your non-billable consult with legal expert Andrew Sherman.
Our executive producer is Tracy Madigan, and our web writer is Bea Aldrich. Music provided by two local bands, the Sunbathers and my own band, Two Car Living Room. If you have a story idea, don't forget to tweet us at What's Working DC. I'm Jonathan Aberman. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to What's Working in Washington on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Tune in Monday afternoons at 2:30 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.